name is Sophie Turin, and I'm co-deputy director of the Centre of European Legal Studies. And it is in this capacity that I'm here to introduce our first speaker for our weekly seminar in European Legal Studies. And it is with great pleasure that I welcome Professor Morten Broberg from the University of Copenhagen. And Professor Broberg's research focuses on two, not mutually exclusive, two areas: European law and international development law. And you have in particular written an impressive and important book on preliminary references to justice. Second edition was published in 2014. Professor Broberg will talk today about arbitration, the relationship between EU law and arbitration tribunals on the basis of the Court of Justice case law in this area. It is a highly topical area, especially as we consider the possibility of challenging a tribunal award by making a preliminary reference before the Court of Justice. And at a very personal level, I'm very grateful to you for choosing to talk about something which doesn't look yet connected to the current Brexit discussion we're having here pretty much every day. And without further ado, the floor is yours.
Right. Thank you very much, Sophie. And thank you to CELS for inviting me to give this presentation. Now, Sophie rightly said, this is not about Brexit. Actually, I was thinking, how are we going to put Britain into this if, when, Britain is leaving the European Union? There is a paper out that you can have one way or the other. And I've actually tried to show that this is still relevant also from a UK perspective, being outside the European Union. So there are a few hints here and there in the paper, but I'm not going into that now. What I'm going to do is to look at two things that we normally consider very different, very distinct, namely EU law and arbitration. The traditional view is that arbitration, there you don't have to take EU law into account, especially not mandatory or fundamental, as I'll call it, EU law. And what I'm going to do is to try to show or to argue that that is clearly wrong. So I'll first look at when is it that an arbitration tribunal has to take EU law into account, when is it obligatory or it should do it in order to come out with an arbitral award that would work for the parties. Then I'm going to look at what happens if it does the opposite. If it comes out with an arbitral award that is contrary to EU law. Then come on to a topic that I have worked with, as Sophie said, very much premium references. I'm going to look at when is it possible for an arbitration tribunal to make a prelim reference to the European Court of Justice. And as you might be able to guess from the last bullet point, the answer is that normally an arbitration tribunal cannot make a reference, so we're also going to look at whether they should be able to do so. All right. Now, when we are looking at the question of whether it's possible for whether an arbitration tribunal should take EU law into account, we first have to make one distinction. And that is the arbitration tribunal part of the judiciary of a member state, or is it not? Does anybody here know of a case where we have had the European Court of Justice or others saying that an arbitration tribunal is part of the judiciary? Marcus.
They're in Finnish employment arbitration that is mandated by law.
Right.
And I can't pronounce the name.
Well, neither would I be. If there's some Finn here, he or she would be able to. Finnish is very far from the Nordic, the Scandinavian language, so I'm not able to either. But that's actually right. We have a number of cases where, first of all, industrial tribunals, they have been considered part of the member state judiciary. Now being Danish, I will of course point to the fact that the Danish case was the first one to show that, but it's true that that has been, so to say, it's clear throughout many countries in Europe that is the way it is. We also have a few Portuguese cases where we have intellectual property rights, we have tax, where the scheme has been set up in a way so that these arbitration tribunals are viewed as part of the judiciary. Essentially, what we do is that we say that we apply the same notion as we find in Article 267 of the Functioning Treaty, that is, the provision on prelim references. So if a member state arbitration tribunal would be able to make a prelim reference, we'll consider it part of the judicial system of that member state. If that's the case, then it has to comply with all the rules that apply to a member state court. Primacy of EU law, direct effect, the principle of sincere cooperation, and also to the extent that there are ex officio obligations of taking EU law into account on the member state courts, that is also applicable to an arbitration tribunal in that case. However, this situation is the exception proving the rule. This is the main rule by far. When we have an arbitration tribunal, in most cases, it'll be between two private parties, and it'll be a situation where these parties themselves decide very much how to go about handling the case. The member state is not very much involved, as would be the case here, and we will not consider that arbitration tribunal to be part of the judiciary of the member state. And when that happens, then the question is, to what extent do these tribunals have to take EU law into account? Yeah, please.
Just got a question.
Sure.
Just about, so the purpose of arbitration is to prevent recourse to the courts. So
yes.
So all these people have to courts. I don't understand that first thing, where why are you actually calling that arbitration at all? Because that is the court.
Sure. Just one side note. If you have questions, do not hesitate. Put them forward while we're doing this. It's much more interesting when we have dialogue. It's actually right. And in these cases where you actually fall into this segment, where you say this is part of the judiciary, in this case you'll say this, well, there are really, it's a kind of private system, but that has been adopted by the member state. So why call that arbitration? If you look to Hungary, a number of the situations down there where they call that arbitration, and that clearly is not arbitration tribunals, and they clearly are just ordinary courts of justice. In the English terminology, they use arbitration tribunal, and I have not included these here. Those cases we have here, the Portuguese ones, I would probably tend to say, why are they not just courts? Whereas if you look to the Danish system, that's been set up by the industrial partners. So you have the employers and the employees, two private associations, each setting this up. The thing is that if you go to Denmark, you start working there, and you're not member of a union, and you have a case, then you have to go to this private arbitration tribunal, and that has obligatory, mandatory jurisdiction over you. And that's due to the law. So the law has kind of reached in this private system the power to decide on these cases. This has been taken out of the ordinary court system into this private court system. And it's not classic private arbitration, but this arbitration, and this is a private system. It's not part of the, in the Danish context, we don't consider that part of the judiciary, but the Court of Justice does. And for that reason, we count them in here. And then we say also that if they are part of the judiciary from the Court of Justice point of view, then all the rules that apply to the judiciary also apply to these arbitration tribunals. But this is clearly, well, first of all, these are exceptions. And secondly, you're absolutely right. If you look to the reported cases, I tend to think that these are more like courts than like arbitration tribunals. But the Court of Justice has claimed that they are still clear arbitration tribunals. So, please.
Following up from the question, does this distinction hint, for for another distinction between commercial tribunals, commercial cases on the right side, and non-commercial cases on the left side, taking into account that investment arbitration, I presume, is totally excluded from this distinction because it doesn't fall within either of the categories.
We were talking about commercial arbitration in these cases. We're going on to look at a situation where the member states have been involved. But also, if you have, for instance, public procurement, now we are kind of jumping a bit, but that's all right. If you look at public procurement, very often you'll see that there's an arbitration clause, and the state is on the one side, and you have a private party on the other one. That's not a problem in its own right. But now we are going into things we should look at a bit later. But all right, just to take that. Obviously, the state cannot evade EU law in this way. So there are limits to what you can use the arbitration system for in this regard. And also, we'll get on to a situation where the member states, in certain cases, try to exempt a complete area of law and put that outside the scope of EU law by, not intentionally, but that's a consequence. If that happens by saying, this is only arbitration, private arbitration, then that is against EU law as such. But let's get back to that in a few minutes. And then if you have more questions there, then please. Was there another one? No, right. All right, perfect. Right. Let's just, I'm doing the wrong slide now. That's not too good. Okay. Okay, when we're on the situation where we have a traditional arbitration tribunal, then essentially what should be decisive for the arbitrators is where they run the real risk of having the arbitral award set aside by not complying with EU law. And we'll have to look into when does that happen. So this is essentially what you should look at. If you become an arbitrator one day and you're rendering an arbitral award, knowing that if the losing party brings this before the national court, the ordinary courts, and the ordinary courts will have to set aside that award, then I think you should think twice before you render that award, because no one wants to render awards that are not going to work. Are not enforceable. Also, if you are the losing party and you know that you have this possibility of not having it enforced the award against you, then obviously, if you are in the European Union, then we have a Brexit issue, of course. If you are in one of the, in the future, unfortunately, 27 member states of the European Union, the other party will not be able to enforce it against you if it has been too clearly against EU law, the award. So let's have a look at this. When does that happen? We have the mud law, and I honestly don't know how to pronounce this, Uncitral. Does someone know?
It is it well.
All right, and I'm not saying it again. Right. The Uncitral, that's basically the mud law, has set up the mud law for when and how the states, parties to this convention, should set up the laws on arbitration. And according to this, if you have an arbitral award, then a more ordinary court should not be able to set aside the award on the basis of mistakes of the facts, on the basis of errors of law, or on the basis of incorrect interpretation of the law. So even if the arbitration tribunal errs when it renders its award, it should still be upheld by the national courts. That's the clear main rule. Main rule, as we all know as lawyers, always should have an exception. That's why we are here. And the exception, according to the mud law, is that if the award is in conflict with the public policy of the state of the court that is now being asked to enforce the award. This makes very good sense, doesn't it? If it's against public policy, then that's a limit. But otherwise, you just have to accept that you went to private arbitration, got an award against you. Had you gone to the courts, you had got another ruling because this award is wrong, the earth and law, for instance. But it's not against public policy, you have to live with it. Essentially, that's the same that the European Court of Justice has said. They use slightly different terms. In the rulings of the Court of Justice, they refer to, where do you have it? I haven't put it in there, but they refer to fundamental provisions. Oh, yes. If it's in conflict with fundamental EU law provisions, then the member state courts cannot uphold the ruling, the award. They have to set it aside. So the question obviously is, what is a fundamental EU law provision? We know that competition law is one of the areas where the Court of Justice said this has to be upheld. You cannot overrule competition law. Could you think of a situation where the two parties to the arbitration would actually have an interest in setting aside competition law and going to private confidential arbitration rather than going to the ordinary courts? If you set up an agreement sharing the market, you are the two dominant businesses in the market, and you make it a market sharing agreement clearly against EU competition law, that would not be upheld by an ordinary court. If you go to our private arbitration, they might uphold it, might issue a fine on the losing party, but if that the winning party then wants to enforce it against the losing party before the ordinary courts, then the ordinary courts have to set it aside because it's against fundamental EU competition law and cannot be upheld. The Court of Justice has also said so when it comes to consumer protection. That's also considered some consumer protection, at least, fundamental EU law provisions. Together with a colleague in Copenhagen, we guess that, and that's a guess because we have no ruling so far, that free movement rules will also be covered. And there might be others, but so far we only have these two examples. Yes, please.
So, looking at the list, I think it's determined by whether the beneficiary of the EU rule is a party to the dispute. So in the competition example, as between the co-contractors, it might be in their interest to enter into the arrangement mm-hmm. and to have that settled by arbitration. But in the arbitration, that does not consider the impact of the agreement on the wider public. And so I would question the free movement rules as being within this category. Is more complex because the parties, as between themselves, might restrict their own movement, and the only people harmed or benefiting from that restriction are the parties themselves. And so the arbitration resolves the dispute. Whereas in the other examples, there are third parties who are going to be impacted by the arbitral finding.
I think that's a very good point. Point taken. We haven't read the paper, I guess.
No.
But actually, we refer to third parties' interests. So
we're thinking alike.
Right. Yes. That's a very good point. So, right. Just to reiterate what you have said, these two situations are really, first of all, about third parties being protected, so that you have the two parties before the arbitration tribunal. They're fighting it out. Actually, I think that one of the cases here was a consumer. So that who you have. So it's not a third party. Here, when you have competition law, then stick to that.
Yeah.
Then clearly, you have two market parties, two businesses. And these two, they might really do things that are detrimental to the consumer, to the competitors, whoever, to the market as such, and want to hide that. And just have enforcement of the agreement they have set up that is anti-competitive. In that case, You're actually right. In that case, the protection that we're looking at is of third parties, not of the parties themselves. So the fact that you cannot enforce the arbitrary award is not to protect the losing party, but to protect the third party. When it comes here, actually, now finger line also, one of the principles as far as I remember, where there was this standard agreement where a consumer was, so to say, just signing, and then you had to go to private arbitration. And there it was held that they could not be, that party could not be held liable, whatever.
Yeah.
In this case, so that was one of the parts that protected. But otherwise, actually, we point out that it's first of all, that's where third parties' interests are. So I need to revise that part of the paper. I think that's a good point you have.
So there's another aspect. So even on the first one, where you're protecting third parties, mm-hmm. the co-contractor can still bring the action on behalf of third parties.
So I'm not sure.
I'm definitely sure that's true. In the Courage and Korean litigation, that's when the court is saying, even if you're party to the illegal action, mm-hmm. and so you would normally be excluded in pari delicto, the law would not come to your aid, mm-hmm. you're entitled to enforce the obligation for the benefit of third parties, even if you're the co-contractor. So the arbitration would settle this between you, and then you'd lose the arbitration, and then say, we can move outside, go to the ordinary court to enforce the competition obligation, mm-hmm. for the benefit of third parties, even though I'm going to benefit from setting aside the arbitration award.
All right. Okay, thanks. Yeah.
Can I just ask, as a chair, maybe whether we can take this question later at the end of your paper? Because I think I've read your paper, and I think there's a broader picture that you're trying to draw here, and perhaps the benefits of those like me who know very little about this topic, I would welcome perhaps you continuing and then addressing this question at the very end.
All right, so will you take it? Okay.
Yeah.
Right, okay. I like questions, honestly. So, but I think you're right. Let's. It was for time. Right. Okay. What we're going on to now is to look at the situation where you have member states directly involved in the arbitration. And we only talked about a situation where you have a member state being a party directly. So you have one private party and you have a local council, you have a state body some kind. And rather than going to the ordinary courts, they may decide to go to arbitration. Public procurement is probably the best situation where you find that. And in principle, there's nothing wrong about that. You can do that as a state. The problem is that as a state, you have the duty to be loyal under EU law, the duty of loyalty. And that means that you cannot, as I write in the first bullet, evade EU law. This, in turn, means that if one party is a member state or a member state body, then the arbitration tribunal will have to look at what are the requirements under EU law against the member state, and they have to enforce that. Otherwise, the member state itself is at fault. They have to live up to EU law in this regard. If the case then goes before the ordinary courts and it's been treated as if these are two private parties rather than one party being a state, then the ordinary court will have to look into the question, has EU law been applied, enforced against the member state? Not against the other party, only against one party. So you have a very asymmetric situation here. The alternative to this approach would be that member states could lawfully evade EU law in these situations by going to private arbitration. And at least in my opinion, that would be very clearly against the basic principle of EU law. That's one situation. The other situation is coming out of the ruling that you probably have heard about, ACMEA. And I'm not going into that dreadful ruling, but from an arbitration law point of view, what that really means is that if a member state enters into an agreement, could be a bilateral investment treaty agreement, and under that agreement decides that arbitration shall apply rather than the ordinary courts in specific areas. So you're taking a complete area, a complete field of law outside the ordinary courts and only applying arbitration tribunal are the only ones that can rule on these issues. In that case, then you will be defying EU law and that will be a breach of EU law on the part of the member state when they enter into this agreement. This does not mean that you cannot have arbitration agreements as a state. That's a public procurement situation. But it means that you cannot simply exempt a complete area of the law. And the question is, what other areas, what bits do we have? And some have pointed to the Energy Charter, we now have a few rulings by arbitration tribunals where that question has been heard. And they say, no, the ACMIA rule basically say only applies to the bilateral investment treaties. I honestly don't know what the Court of Justice will say. But again, to my mind, this makes very good sense that you say that you are not, as a member state, allowed to exempt areas from EU law that would otherwise fall within the field of EU law, and you exempt it by taking it away from the ordinary courts, thereby allowing the arbitration tribunal to apply a different approach that does not involve EU law. Right. Okay. I have to do that for the time. So, these are the issues regarding to what extent will you have to take EU law into account as an arbitration tribunal, to what extent can you as a member state exempt or go to private arbitration or exempt EU law by setting up schemes that point to private arbitration rather than the ordinary courts. Now, turning to the prelim reference issue. The prelim reference, very brief, I guess that more or less everybody here knows what it is, but essentially, just to reiterate, the prelim reference means that a member state court that is faced with a question of EU law, and that question must be decided in order to decide the dispute before the national court. That court can ask the Court of Justice for a ruling, a prelim ruling, deciding how is that legal question, EU question, to be decided. It can be about interpretation, it could be about validity. And now that we have seen that arbitration tribunals might be faced with EU law, and it happens more frequently now than has happened earlier, it would seem natural to say, right, why don't we allow the arbitration tribunals to go to the ECJ and ask make a prelim reference? And the question can be answered very easily, because there have been a number of arbitration tribunals who have put this question, and the Court of Justice, they have a very clear standard for when are you, as a tribunal in a member state, when can you put this type of questions? You have to fulfill the requirement of being a court or tribunal of a member state, as laid down in Article 267 of the Functioning Treaty. And according to the case law of the court, there are a number of criteria that must be met. The weight of each criterion is not clear, but some are very heavy and some are not. Independent is one of the heavy ones. The body has to be independent, the body after the question. And we must say that arbitration tribunals are independent in the sense as defined by the Court of Justice. In most cases, there must be an adversary procedure. That's not a decisive one, but anyhow, it's fulfilled by arbitration tribunals. And the decision that's going to be taken has to be taken on the basis of legal rules. It's also the case. The problem is that we have three very heavy criteria that are not met by arbitration agreements in most cases, apart from those that Marcus pointed to earlier. It has to be established by law, so Parliament has to be involved one way or other in defining this body. It has to have a permanent character. It's not the people sitting on the arbitration tribunal, it's the institution behind it. And sometimes we actually do fulfill this for certain arbitration tribunals, but we always do so with ordinary courts. So ordinary courts, obviously, we can also have different judges sitting on the bench, but still it's permanent as such. And then it has to have compulsory jurisdiction. And compulsory jurisdiction means that if one party brings a case to the court or the tribunal, then the other party is forced to take part in the proceedings. Sometimes that's fulfilled, sometimes not, when we're talking about arbitration. And in most cases, it's not, because in most cases, it's based on an agreement, prior agreement. Only when you sign the agreement are you obliged to go to that tribunal. Until you sign obviously at a time when you are good friends, and then later on you are less good friends. But at that time, of course, it's compulsory. But the question is, how was it before you signed the agreement? And in most cases, you have free choice. So at least these two, and most often also this one, these three criteria are not met. And for that reason, the Court of Justice has said that most arbitration tribunals cannot make prelim reference. So, wrapping up by looking into, should we actually change this scheme? And those who have looked into it generally say, yes, we should. We should try to make this scheme different so that, at least to some extent, arbitration tribunals can make prelim references. And I do not agree with that. There are some pros. We see more arbitration cases coming up, and the more EU law that is decided, that is coming before arbitration tribunals, the more of a black hole do we have where we do not know, we cannot, so to say, control what's happening, how does EU law develop in that area. And we also have that EU law is spreading. There are still more areas, not least intellectual property rights, consumer protection, company law, where you see that issues that may well go to private arbitration are being regulated by the EU. So there are good reasons you can point to in order to argue that we should have this prelim reference scheme. But if we do that, if we try to change the scheme as it is now, and allow arbitration tribunals to go there, then first of all, we have to change the criteria. And it's not because I'm now working on the third edition of this book, and there'd be more work if you change the criteria, obviously. But that's not the main reason, that's only part of the reason. No, really, the situation is that if we change these criteria and allow more arbitration tribunals, it's really difficult to see where is the limit going to be. It's a very balanced system we have today, where bodies that would not be seen as court can make references for good reasons, but arbitration tribunals just fall below this level. But very many of the bodies that you find in the member states, which are appeal boards, etc., they are able to make these references. If you lower the level, it's very difficult to see, it's going to be dangerous to see how many strengths or bodies that are going to make references. If we lower the level, if we allow arbitration tribunals to be able to make prelim references, we have one side, one consequence that so far no one seems to have thought about. And that is, if there's no direct appeal from the body making the reference, it follows from Article 267, Section 3, that body is not just having a right to make prelim reference, it's obligated to do so. It's duty must make the reference. If it thinks that it's necessary, it doesn't have a choice, it has to make it. And since we do not have direct appeals from, in most cases at least, from trade tribunals, they will fall into this category. And that means that any time that a trade tribunal think that we need, we could think of having, it would be good to have a prelim reference ruling from the Court of Justice, then they have to make the reference. Does anybody know how long it takes, by the way, at the moment, for the Court of Justice to rule on a prelim reference? 2008. Sorry?
15 months?
It's 15-7, 2 years ago, last year it was 16 months. So yes, close to 1.5 years that you wait from you submit your reference through until you have the answer back. The idea of having arbitration to have a confidential and swift decision is a bit difficult if you have a prelim reference as part of that, especially if you're obligated to do that as the tribunal. So it's going to be longer, and we are also having the last point I'm making, that now when we're talking about arbitration tribunals, I think most of us think about people from law faculties, judges who are doing this on the side, barristers, people like that. It doesn't have to be like that. Some arbitration tribunals are having people who have no legal skills and who might not really know much about EU law at all and just send off this reference. And what you could even think of is that two parties who like to have questions solved under EU law could construe a case, go to private arbitration, decide to do that, and then have that arbitration tribunal submit the reference in order to have what would seem to be a real prelim reference, but what is basically a construed case. And as some of you might know, this has happened not from arbitration tribunal, but from the Cyprus court. We had a case that was completely rigged and sent off to Luxembourg. So it's difficult to do that with the courts. Our trade tribunal, that could certainly happen and would be a situation that we really had to consider. So on balance, I'm fairly much in the red. I'm saying I don't think we should allow our trade tribunals to do this. All right. Now time is... Yes, my time is up. I'm finalizing now, but then we can take questions. Right, okay.